When you need your work truck to work as hard as you do, trust Delphi Technologies to deliver the parts built for the toughest work environments. From construction sites to long-distance hauling, go with the aftermarket supplier known for its 100-plus years of OE heritage and expertise. Go to DelphiAftermarket.com today. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Ross. Now, the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is one that we hear a lot about in the corporate world and the company world, industries, not just the aftermarket, but certainly broadly across industries, organizations, large and small, are aware of the conversations around it. We're all in different places as far as, you know, where our organizations and ourselves are in thinking about how it fits with us and our lives and our worlds and our professional selves too. With me today is Shannon Spano. She's the Vice President of Sales at Wakefield Canada, but she is also the Chair of the AI Canada, the Automotive Industries Association of Canada, and has made it a personal cause to drive forward the awareness and issue around DEI. So Shannon, welcome to the podcast.
Very much, Andrew. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah. For someone who doesn't spend all their time, with their head stuck in an HR handbook, how would you describe DEI and kind of the real world and what it is? I mean, people have heard the terms a lot, but might not have really kind of figured out what it really means. So,
yeah, absolutely. I see it on many dimensions. And so I'll kind of break it down at a very personal level or a human 101 level. And then talk about, obviously, organizational value. But I think at the core, essentially, it's just trying to understand unique and diverse perspectives with a goal of creating a deeper sense of belonging. So valuing that everybody comes, whether it be a female in a male-dominated industry or an immigrant coming into Canada, it's trying to understand all the different various perspectives that are at the table in terms of how they create their own experiences. And so a lot of it is conversational at the very core. And it's really about trying to understand why things are perceived differently, what potentially that there's biases there that might be we need to unpack and understand more, and really trying to celebrate and recognize why, again, diversity drives success. I say it as from an organizational value and at an industry at large. There's a high degree of conversations now about how what high-performing cultures look like. And high-performing teams and winning cultures and driving performance success and sustainability. And a lot of it is linked to the fact that you don't need to all look the same, all have the same thoughts, especially as you're facing such immense change and pivoting and adapting and evolving and pursuing growth. It's really important that the depth and breadth of experiences around the table and perspectives actually help organizations thrive and survive. And so I think, DEI to me is very much a foundational part of business. It might not have been called DEI years past before it kind of had this brand and movement that was kind of getting a lot of traction in the last few years. I think of it 10 years ago, it could have been employee engagement surveys where you would be asking these unique questions to people to understand, what makes a sense, how do you feel belonging? What are your values and why do you come to work? Why are you attracted to come to work to this organization? And how do you want to develop your skills and grow and keep evolving? And so it's very, to me, foundational in business, but it has a bit of a brand and a unique conversation right now that's creating conversations that are, I would say, both healthy and also, there's resistance. And that's good. That just shows you that the conversation is evolving and getting out there, which is the goal, I think, at the heart of it.
Sure. How's it obviously working in the aftermarket, but not from forever for the aftermarket. So you come from, a few years back now, but, you have.
Yeah, 17, but who's counting? Yes.
Yeah. You've had the benefit of that. From your perspective, how's it playing out or not playing out in the aftermarket?
Listen, I think of progress over perfection, right? I always think that if I can reflect on 15 years ago versus my own experiences personally, or what I'm kind of seeing as either macro trends or in conversations with people that I work with or customers, or in, through the AIA membership, I would say that we've made progress because you see just more representation and these conversations actually taking light. You know, I think about the foundation of AIA 15 years ago might be about networking. Well, now networking can be about how to, you know, how do I network and create these conversations about, hey, I feel like there's might be a way that I could, should, is this the right way to succeed? Or should I, you know, should, how do I learn and how do I kind of unpack my own skills so that I can be stronger? And so I think of it all kind of related to, we are making progress, but there's more work to happen. And that's the beauty of movement, right? And advocacy. And I think, you know, at a time where the industry and the aftermarket is going through such change, and disruption, and challenge, it always creates opportunity. And I think the best thing we can do collectively, as a community is try to promote the, again, the amazing diversity in this industry, and all the different, facets of whether it be where you live in the country, your type of business, where you are in your, you know, whether you be young and just starting in the industry, trying to, you know, upskill and reskill, as you grow and redefine your skills. I think all of those things kind of play a big role here and in the future of the health of the industry. So I do see a lot of change and a lot of progress. I just still think there's more work to do. And so that's the beauty of it all, right?
Right, right. I mean, I, you know, in full transparency here, and Shannon and I talked about this before, dear listener, that, you know, there is a certain amount of irony in that, both of us do not look terribly, you know, again, yes, superficial. The way we look
yeah,
is not,
yeah,
does not look, we do not like the, like the picture of diversity here. I mean, I have very, yeah, very much European background myself. A lot of, well, and a decreasing amount of gray hair. you know, so we're having this conversation. I just wanted to be, you know, transparent about it. We recognize, yeah, that might seem ironic, yeah, to people, but nonetheless, this is here where we are, and this is our conversation. So, now, not everybody is a fan, right? You know, yeah, and it's been cast in some pretty, you know, heinous terms. You know, as far as DEI, I recently shared with you a comment, not specifically from somebody in the aftermarket, but it called it a, you know, a cultural poison pill, as if it was created, designed to create resentment and animosity inside an organization. Some kind of engineering idea to drive people apart. When you hear that kind of a sentiment, like, how does it make you feel?
Thank you for asking. And I'm going to tell you the journey I have, just feeling, absorbing that. Immediately, I feel resistance, right? I want to go and defend my choices. I want to go kind of stand up on a stage and say, you're wrong. And then I start to absorb it. And I think about it. And I think, where are the motivators for that feeling? Whether it be in media or just directionally with one conversation. And you realize that resistance is really a fear or a threat-based response. So when you start to really unpack it at the very personal level, that person that is saying that, or that business that doesn't recognize it, I think sees it as a threat and us versus them. You know, and I think we have many, many, many examples of that. I sometimes use the word feminism and people think it's pro-women. It's actually pro-equality. And so just even the language sometimes creates a belief system that is actually not the purpose of the drive, right? So I think a lot of the conversations I've had is it starts with almost a bit of a both two people feeling quite defensive, to be honest. But then as you start to really explore and unpack and create open-ended conversations around it, you realize that a lot of it is because it's perceived as threat. And I think of threat in like three different ways. I think they talk about, you know, I think people of privilege, and I would say I'm a person of privilege, sometimes feel like it's discounting the merit that they've earned, the achievement that they've built, because the constructs might have created a better way for them to path their own career. And so I think that feels like a personal threat. So they either feel like they are, you know, it's a slam against themselves personally, or that, you know, again, it's just they don't want to identify with that system that created that ability to do that. Potentially easier. And I think those are the kinds of conversations that I'm having is really, why do you feel like that? Let's talk about that. And if it was less about this movement is to place blame or labeling on something of the past, but more about how do we create a progressive future? And how do we make sure we really understand each other? So again, there's equal access or more opportunities or just a sense of belonging and community within organizations to drive common goals. All of those things have tremendous business value. And at a personal level, I think just recognizing different cultures and diverse thinking is actually just really to just create a deeper sense of belonging. So I think I resist it when I hear it too, because it feels like a threat, but I think it's a very natural human response when we feel threatened and we feel fear. And so I think as long as you can unpack it and have the ability and growth mindset to just explore why, I think you'll come out to a much stronger strategy. So.
Sure. Within larger organizations, and you're bound to have all kinds of people who have different viewpoints about, well, a lot of things. That is the cornerstone of diversity, right? But so you're going to have positive and negatives, and I guess
that's healthy.
I guess it's trying to even within an organization, trying to balance those sounds like a key issue for any initiative. Is that a fair comment? We'll be right back after this. Did you know that Delphi Technologies is the only OE full-line fuel supplier? Go with the global aftermarket supplier with over 3,200 SKUs covering more than 280 million vehicles in operation, and with parts tested in OE durability and reliability conditions to ensure a quality fit and performance. Learn more at DelphiAftermarket.com.
Yeah, balancing listening first, a curiosity to understand, seek to understand first. You're not going to win everybody, right? I think it's like politics. You're not going to get, it's a divisive conversation often. And I think you have to spend your energy where it's most valued to the majority of people. I kind of think of DEI less about the political side of it and more about the personal side of it. And the one-on-one connections and just kind of breaking things down, and at the organizational level, just celebrating and creating a positive light about celebrating. Again, we just had a potluck and we had 40 different cultures represented in foods. And I think like that's a perfect example of, wow, I'm just learning, right? I'm just experiencing somebody else's food and culture in a moment with others. I think that's kind of at a core what it's really about, celebrating with. Who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Now, when you have the occasion to see many organizations in the aftermarket, and some certainly in my experience, again, just unfortunately forced to just look at the superficial. What are the colors of people's skin? Do they look different?
Yeah.
Names? I don't really know anything about a lot of the folks' backgrounds. With that caveat, when you do things similar and you're talking to organizations, whether it's through your position at AIA Canada or just in business, and you see some organizations for sure will look more diverse than other organizations, in your perception of it, is it for those organizations that have not come to a more diverse reality in their workforce, is it a conscious decision to keep people out, or is it kind of habit, or what is really at the root of organizations that may look around and say, we're just not really diverse, and might have all kinds of reasons why, or maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole piece about it. There's many reasons, right? And again, I think if we can look beyond that, sometimes it's maybe less about. That might be one lens, but I would say, how does that company show up and how they market themselves and what's their company culture and how do they support their customers? And there's lots of things that I would say, maybe they might not look a little less diverse, but their culture is much more progressive and promotes that within their customer base. So I always think that there's many lenses to look at there. I think it's a balancing act, because I think you're always trying to find the best people for your organization and at the core. Highly engaged, highly talented, spirited teamwork, all those things that are really kind of help propel. And so maybe companies haven't felt that they've had to, either by chance or by purpose, they haven't had to maneuver that space as others. And some are naturally just doing it more and more. I think about probably the larger the organization, probably the more diverse in general. And at the business level, marketplaces look very different too, and across Canada. And so some businesses might just be more representative of the community that they work in. So I think it's got a lot of things in there. But I think as long as we don't place as much judgment, and again, think about, what companies are doing with the culture of diversity and inclusion, I think that can really help them too.
Yeah. I mean, is it fair to say that, it's not something that we should just rely on kind of happening necessarily organically?
So it's a great question. I think there's a lot of ways you can help, and there's a lot of ways we can just small changes, many hands, kind of like to make movement. Kind of like the Right to Repair Act, if you're quite honest about you. There's individual conversations, and then there's amazing lobbying that we're doing as an industry, an association. So I think of it kind of in that space. Don't discount the one-on-one conversation. Don't discount that, because organically, I know in my career, those one-on-one moments, whether it be a leadership talk, a mentorship talk, or a leadership talk, or being with a customer and just listening to their needs. I mean, at the end of the day, those are just as transformative as sitting in a four-hour course and being trained on something, right? And I think that that's why I always like the organic approach, but I think it has to be backed by programming and policies and support and committee work and just a collective conversation. There's power in many. I also think leadership, creating sponsorship in organizations is extremely important. I've been to many of our customers' conferences in Canada, and when the president of the company is standing on a podium and talks about DEI, and they're a white male, that is actually really powerful. That's more powerful sometimes than me standing up and saying it, because again, it's Mark Cuban speaking in media. It's actually great that we're having a conversation. You and I are having this conversation. So it is inclusive to have a conversation at all levels of perspective. And so, yes, I think it, I don't know where I was going with that one, but I think it makes sense.
Yeah, but it makes sense, and thank you so much for using me in the same breath as Mark Cuban. I'll take that one to the bank. But I think the point is, from my perspective, and just trying to sort of coalesce for listeners, is that there is a little, you did need to make a little bit of a push, right? Like, you need to have the conversation.
Yeah.
You need to get over yourself if you're a business leader and say, despite some of the maybe backlash that some people might have about it because they have a misunderstanding about what it means, we need to have the conversation, both at large, standing on a dais, on a stage before an organization or my customers or whoever, but also one-on-one with staff, potential staff, customers, one-on-one to sort of have the conversation.
And I will say this as the last piece on this, because I won't package it with DEI, but there's a ton of work that's been done in just leadership styles and psychology of leadership. And what's really come through, especially in the last couple of years with what we've gone through, pandemic and everything, is authentic, humble, like humility, leadership showing up in a much bigger way, approachability and accessibility. It's not about somebody that is never, is almost like a figurehead. It's somebody that's a real person, right? That's standing up and I want to follow that person and I want to learn more because I can actually create a deeper sense of connection with that person that way. And I think that is essentially what we're all trying to do, is humble ourselves, recognize it, unpack our own biases. We all have them. We're a collection of our experiences. And so if we can actually unpack our own, who we are and what age we are and what demographic we are, all of those things, I think that is a collective we're doing together. It's to me, that is what we're really doing, is fostering, break it down to build it back up, right? And really trying to understand it at a very core, visceral human level.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, sort of without, at the risk of backtracking a little bit, I think about, I don't even know if it's still the case so much anymore, but sort of the cliched legal firm that only hires,
yes,
grads, and it's like, well, you're going to get a certain kind of person, right? And it makes it very comfortable for the organization. Internally, you're not going to get a lot of opposition. People think the same way. They don't bring a lot of new stuff to the party either, right? you
No,
know?
and you know, I think again, I just think of many companies right now are going to continue to. I hate that word pivot; it's the wrong word potentially in this. But be agile, be flexible, evolve, react to it, be proactive, and react to a very changing, dynamic marketplace. And so, I, you know, that company can stay like that if that's what they need to be, but they potentially be the blockbuster down the road, right? So,
right.
And so, yes. I think you know that you just want to be. It's just. It's a lot on the human psyche, but I think it's really important. I think it's going to make people stronger in their careers. We're going to build better leaders. I think we're going to lift people up as we go. And I think companies will be very well positioned through that. So
yeah.
If they are really harnessing that.
For the aftermarket, you know, how important is it? How important is it to move forward on DEI? I mean, what's at stake here?
Yeah, I think, you know, the aftermarket is going through, you know, when I think at the AIA level, in my conversations and at the board and what we're talking about, it's really making sure the association continues to add value to their members, as value is always changing and is unique to the member. And we're seeing a lot of transformative, you know, consolidations, mergers and acquisitions, all those things going on in the aftermarket. So I think that is one lens of it all. Is the change is happening with the, you know, the memberships or the structure of the aftermarket. And so you're just going to have to stay very dynamic. Relationships are going to involve all those pieces there. But at the second part, I think, you know, new skills and attracting and retaining talent and making sure that companies are a great place to work. You know, I didn't join the aftermarket because of the aftermarket. I joined Wakefield Canada because it was this amazing culture and Canadian success story and entrepreneurial customer first philosophy that I was just, it's so inspiring to be part of. Then I got into the industry and wow, the relationships are just what drives it at the heart. And so it's people first. And so I think, you know, if we could celebrate that and this unique makeup of the Canadian marketplace and the aftermarket, I think that is to me really exciting and inspiring for people that are starting their careers and want to come to an industry that they don't know as well. Or stay in an industry that potentially is going through disruptive change. So it is incredibly important. It might not always feel like DEI as the agenda, but if I think about change management being the buzzword, or you know, positioning for growth, or adjusting through change, and all those, they're still the same kind of lens, right? Preparing people for future.
Right. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, you know, about the differences in local marketplaces, especially for whether it's for, you know, part stores or shops, you know, you know, the community may not in itself be particularly diverse. But I do have to say that I've yet to find any even small communities that have not seen their local
Conditions
change, their local cultures change, bringing in lots of newcomers across this country. You know, we didn't talk about this before, but you know, is it just a generally good like yardstick to say, you know, does my business look like my community?
So, I mean, absolutely. Why not? I think it's my business look and my business serve. And so I think the serving part is to me the part that it doesn't have to always look in one through the people. It could be, again, how they market themselves, how they serve their customers, how they show up. So I think it's, you know, there's no reason why a less diverse business can't be equally successful if they foster the DEI kind of thoughts and leadership, you know, movements through their business model as well. As over time. But yes, I think it's a fair point to make. And, you know, it's interesting, like, I think, you know, I was at a conference in the aftermarket last week, and there was a comment about, you know, Quebec knows Quebec knows Canada, but Canada doesn't know Quebec, right? So, and I say that this is one, you know, that's just a geography conversation, right? Or a marketplace, but it's not just people specifically, it's the regions all operate differently in the aftermarket as well. And I think that's a really interesting kind of, you know, how we've seen the Canadian aftermarket take form over the last 40, 50 years. It's been really kind of neat to see that, because you do see variances. Even if you're a national customer, you can see variances in every market. And that's actually really cool. And I love the thought of independents have been able to thrive in this space for so long. And I hope they can continue in the future.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned that. I'm thinking back to my my schoolboy days, regionalism defines Canada, right? So
absolutely.
That's a kind of diversity in and of itself, right? So
it is, absolutely.
Yeah, Shannon, thank you so much for coming on. I hope that listeners will give it some thought, take a look around their own organizations after listening to this, and make some decisions or make some observations even internally, and just think, am I doing what I can to position my organization for success in the future, and do I have the right people, the right diversity of opinion and experience and talents, do my staff and team members, what can I learn from them? What can they learn from us? And improve the organizations by having that diversity of opinion, right?
Yeah. And create a sense of belonging. I mean, I think it's diversity and inclusion for a reason, right? They're both so important. So right. Yeah, absolutely. And start from within. I really think it starts with each of us as people first. So yeah.
Good plan. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining me, Shannon. Really appreciate your time, and time for all the listeners too. Give it some thought. DEI. It's not a four-letter word, literally.
Listening to the Great Canadian Aftermarket Podcast brought to you by the publishers of Indie Garage and Jobber Nation. Connect with us online at indiegarage.ca and jobbernation.ca, a brand of Chat Integrated Media.
Pothole damage to a vehicle's chassis is always a concern, no matter the size or time of year. If the worst does happen, you can count on Delphi Technology steering and suspension parts to get your customers back on the road again. Learn more at DelphiAftermarket.com.